I'm going to kick off today's Acoustic Tuesday episode with a little bit of a question. Not quite Guitar Geek trivia, that'll come a little bit later. But the question I have for you right now is this. What do Keith Richards, Mick Jagger, Tom Petty, Dan Auerbach, Chris Cornell, KT Tunstall, Sheryl Crow, when she's not playing her country western, Billy Joe Armstrong, and even Corey Taylor of Slipknot all have in common? Well, if you answered the Gibson Hummingbird, you're 100% correct. Yes, they all have played or currently play a Gibson Hummingbird during acoustic songs. And why am I asking you this question? Well, because today's Acoustic Tuesday is dedicated to the iconic Gibson Hummingbird. Yes, the Gibson Hummingbird, introduced in 1960-61, is probably one of the most eye-catching guitars in the acoustic guitar market, and we should celebrate it. And that's exactly what today's Acoustic Tuesday show is all about. In fact, we're gonna kick things off with five reasons why you, as a guitar geek, should experience a Gibson Hummingbird guitar. Yes, it is your obligation as a guitar geek to experience, to play, to even own a Gibson Hummingbird. Why? Well, here are five reasons. Reason number one shows my extreme bias, because all modern day Gibson Hummingbirds are built in Bozeman, Montana. Yes, they are handcrafted right here in Bozeman, Montana. In fact, every single Gibson acoustic guitar from about, I want to say 1990, 91, 92 forward has actually originated here in Bozeman, Montana, except for a weird Canadian period. We don't have to talk about that part of the history. It was kind of a weird experiment. We'll call it that. But yes, all modern day Gibsons are sourced and built, not sourced, built here in Bozeman, Montana. And for those of you who haven't had a chance to visit the Gibson Montana factory, well, I'm going to take you on a little bit of a tour right now. Here it is. Yes, all of that goes down right here in Bozeman, Montana. And as that video was playing, I thought to myself, what was that Canadian manufacturer that Gibson purchased? It was Garrison Acoustics. They had this weird internal bracing system made out of plastic or resin or something like that. A little factoidal nugget. We don't have to go fully into that black hole of guitar geek knowledge because we're not focused on that. We're focused on the Gibson Hummingbird. And the next reason you absolutely must experience a Gibson Hummingbird is because it is Gibson's flagship square-shouldered dreadnought design. Yes, all the way until, it took them all the way until 1960 to release a square-shouldered dreadnought. Prior to, it had pretty much been, well, Martin guitars making square-shouldered dreadnoughts. And then Gibson said, you know what? 1960 rolls around, we're going to do a square shoulder dreadnought, but we're going to do it with a little bit of a, well, a little bit of a splash. We're going to make it pretty aesthetically pleasing, gorgeous to look at, and really comfortable to play. And a lot of that has to do with some other reasons I'm going to list here in a moment. But if you're curious of what a 1961-60 Hummingbird looks like and sounds like, here's Mark Agnesi, formerly of Norman's Rare Guitars, currently of Gibson, getting his hands on an iconic model in its first production year. Let's check it out.
Hey, Mark Agnesi here again in the back room at Norman's Rare Guitars. It's Guitar of the Daytime. It's Flat Top Friday. How about a cool first year Hummingbird? Check this thing out. 1961 Gibson Hummingbird. First official year of release. Original Heritage Cherry Sunburst finish. This isn't a minty guitar. This guitar shows a little bit of vibe on it. That's how we like them here too. We do like minty stuff, but I like a guitar that's been played. There's definitely some songs in this thing. Like I said, original spruce top, Heritage Cherry Sunburst finish, mahogany back and sides. It's got that classic 61 slim taper neck on it. This is the first year, official year of production. There are a few guitars that we call R-Birds, which refers to the factory order number R for 1960. Occasionally, a couple of those have come through here over the years. The pre-release Hummingbirds, we call that. But this is first official year of production. Why don't we go grab a flat pick, see what this thing sounds like. All right, we're here. We have the 1961 Gibson Hummingbird, Heritage Cherry finish. This is what it sounds like.
Pretty awesome to see such an iconic guitar in its first year of production, and it sounds so good. I mean, you compare a Martin Dreadnought to a Gibson Hummingbird, and immediately anyone can tell the difference, because the Gibson Hummingbird is breathtaking. And that actually brings me to the next reason why, as a guitar geek, you are obligated to experience a Gibson Hummingbird, and that is because of what I'm calling the aesthetic trifecta. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, guitar geeks of all ages, the aesthetic trifecta is a reason you need to seek out a Gibson Hummingbird and just behold it. Play it, look at it, because there are three things that I think will take your breath away. Number one is the split parallelogram inlay on the rosewood fretboard. Awesome to look at, just a great aesthetic touch. The second is that cherry burst top. It is unmistakable and absolutely gorgeous. And the third thing is the pickguard, a finely engraved pickguard that is just beautiful and kind of gives off a little bit of a hippie vibe, a little bit of a country vibe. It just gives off vibe. And to get a closer look, here is a Gibson. Here is a video from Gibson, kind of highlighting some of these. The pieces of the aesthetic trifecta. Here it is.
Very distinctive look from 1960 when this guitar was first introduced to the market. A pickguard with the birds and flowers, the coloration, the red, just gives this that distinctive style that can be seen from across a room and cannot be mistaken for any other guitar on the marketplace today. It has a look that is just Gibson. With the traditional cherry sunburst finish, has a 24 3/4 inch scale length, which gives it a lot of versatility from finger style to strumming, mahogany back and sides and neck, rosewood fingerboard and bridge. This guitar.
All right, pretty gorgeous guitar to look at. I love that shot of it just sitting in the factory and just kind of looking proud. It's just a proud-looking guitar, which actually, you know, it's funny. I've mentioned a couple of things before in this countdown of why the Gibson Hummingbird is so iconic. And earlier I mentioned something about scale length. If I didn't, I'm going to mention it now, because that's my next reason why, as a guitar geek, you need to experience a Gibson Hummingbird, and that is because of comfort. There are three things that I think are... That I think make the Gibson Hummingbird an extremely comfortable guitar to play. Now, that being said, when I played the very first Gibson Hummingbird I had a chance to play, I thought, wow, things feel really tight. And my fingers were kind of having a hard time navigating the strings, which is why I put comfort on this list. And you might be thinking, Tone, that doesn't sound comfortable. But for a player with smaller hands that's seeking a bigger bodied guitar but still wants to be able to actually play it and not feel like their fingers are stretching all over the place, the Gibson Hummingbird is a great fit. Why? Well, because the scale length is actually a little bit shorter, 24 3/4 as opposed to 25 1/2. It also has a slim nut width, 1 inch and 11/16, and I would even venture to guess it's even slightly slimmer than an inch and 11 sixteenths. Nonetheless, the string spacing is a little bit tighter than usual, and the neck profile, as Mark said in that video, is kind of a slim tapered neck profile, which for a guitarist with smaller hands that wants a bigger sound but doesn't want to battle a big dreadnought with a wider nut width and a longer scale, the Hummingbird's a great fit. In fact, if you're still confused about scale length and why it feels the way it does, Don Raffato, the Gibson acoustic rep here in Bozeman, Montana, recently went to a music store and gave a talk about the Gibson Hummingbird, and specifically he dove into the scale length, and I think he did a great job of explaining it so that, well, it's just downright easy to understand. So here's Don.
Gibson's the Hummingbird 1960. In 1962, Gibson introduced the Dove. And there's always been some confusion to some people, you know, what's the difference between a Dove and a Hummingbird? And those of you that are familiar with guitars, you know they have their similarities. But there's two basic main differences between the two. The Hummingbird has traditionally been a mahogany guitar with a short scale fingerboard. And the Dove has been a maple guitar with a long scale fingerboard. Now, some people that aren't guitar nerds wonder what long scale, short scale, what's the differences, what's the advantages, what do you mean by that? Well, the scale length is the length of the string between the saddle and the nut. The physics behind it is you take a string of any given diameter, and the longer it is, the tighter you need to stretch it to get it to a specific pitch. So you have a long scale guitar, what's that mean? It means it's going to be a little tighter, it's going to play a little stiffer, whereas a short scale guitar is going to have a little less tension, it's going to play a little easier. Okay, but on the positives and negatives, yes, the short scale will play easier, it's nicer if you play with a lighter touch, but you're not going to get the overall volume you get out of that tighter tension long scale guitar. I always make the analogy, that's why Martins, the bluegrass, the traditional bluegrass instruments are all long scale. They need that volume because a lot of times they're playing fully acoustically, not plugged in. And as I always say, they got to compete with those damn banjos. And so it's like, it's the only way you can get there is by being loud. And so it's that's the long scale, short scale thing. Traditionally, all our 45s and our Hummingbirds have been short scale. Our J200s and like our advanced jumbos and our songwriter line have been long scale.
The Gibson Hummingbird is just fantastic to look at. There was the honeyburst color. I almost said flavor. That was the honeyburst color, and that even looks cool. I mean, I find myself more partial to the cherry burst, but I can take the honeyburst. That's fine. Now, I have another reason why you as a guitar geek must experience the Gibson Hummingbird, but let's do a very quick recap of the reasons why, so far, you must experience a Gibson Hummingbird. Number one, the modern ones are built in Bozeman, Montana. Number two, it's Gibson's flagship square shoulder dreadnought design. Number three, the aesthetic trifecta. Yes, it's a darn right sexy guitar to look at. And number four, it's comfortable because of the scale length, the slimmer nut width, and the slim taper neck. Ugh, it's a treat to play. Now on to reason number five. It's the lead domino, the start of a trend, if you will. Yes, I'm not sure if this was ever designated as a series, but to me, in my mind, it seems to be a series, and we can call it the dedication to birds. Yes, it started in 1960 with the Gibson Hummingbird, with that beautiful pickguard. From there, we moved to the Gibson Dove, which had maple back and sides and a nice dove-themed pickguard. From there, we go to the Gibson Doves in Flight, which is kind of a take on a dove, but definitely more artistic. The pickguard is much more highly engraved, as is the fingerboard and the headstock. Pretty handsome fella playing that guitar. Not a lot of tattoos, not a lot of hair. I'm skeptical. From there, we actually move to the Gibson Firebird acoustic, which is an interesting model. Because that was not, to the best of my knowledge, not a vintage model by any means, but going from Gibson Firebird in the electric guitar world, it's extremely popular. They brought that same aesthetic to the acoustic world, and here you have an engraved pickguard and also some Phoenix kind of engravings and inlay on the headstock and the fingerboard. This fella playing this guitar has not a lot of tattoos, but I can see he's getting stronger in the hair department. Pretty good looking fella. And then let's go ahead and move to a variation on the Hummingbird, the Eric Church Hummingbird. Now, I'll say this, Eric Church is not my favorite artist by any means, but I think this shows the versatility of the Hummingbird aesthetic. You can throw a different burst on, you could even engrave it with a different color in the pickguard, and it still works. It still looks pretty darn cool. So pretty awesome stuff, and definitely the start of what I think is a trend. Now, one of the common characteristics with all of those guitars is engraving on the pickguard. And I never really knew how the hell that was done. I mean, I've seen engraving in bowling balls, but nothing as delicate as a pickguard. Well, last year, not 2020, but 2019, at the NAMM show, Gibson actually set up a station where they had one of their master luthiers engraving pickguards, so you can actually see how it's done. And here that video is.
We are here at the 2019 NAMM show, and we have the opportunity to showcase the craftsmanship and the handwork that goes into the Gibson acoustic guitars and all of the business units' guitars. What Jason Jones, one of our master luthiers from Bozeman, Montana, is doing now is hand engraving the mother of pearl on a Dubbin Flight pickguard. A lot of people do not realize that this is all hand done. Everyone's a little bit different. Everyone is unique. Jason is an artist, and he is just defining the feather details, the eyes. He will take his engraving tool and just hand etch what he feels is the best look to make this look like a realistic dove. After he has etched it, what he will do is he will clean it out. He will fill in the etchings with the black ink. When he wipes it off, it's like scrimshaw concept. But as you can see, it's very detailed. And just the fact that everyone is a little bit different just gives these guitars that handmade factor. Here is one that's completed. I'll set it here and you can get some pictures of that. When he is done doing that bird, that's what you will have. We're really proud of the fact.
Pretty awesome to see that actually happening in real time. So huge thanks to Gibson for that. So there you have it. Those are the five reasons as a guitar geek you must experience a Gibson Hummingbird. Now, this could mean just simply playing it, or if you want to go ahead and own it, I am not going to stop you. In fact, I want to encourage you to do that. Now, if I missed any reasons why the Gibson Hummingbird is an iconic guitar, in the comments below, please let me know. As I mentioned before, as I was doing research for this episode, the Gibson Hummingbird, in my mind, is pretty darn iconic. But the more research I did, I was like, gosh, there's not a lot of information out there. So I'm going to ask you. In fact, as a guitar geek community, I would love to compile a huge list of why the Gibson Hummingbird is an iconic guitar and why so many players end up playing that guitar. So in the comments below, please let me know. All right, this week on Acoustic Tuesday, you've already learned about the Gibson Hummingbird's iconic status. We're going to dig into another bird-themed icon. A little play on words. I'm pretty excited about that one. We're going to have a look at an artist whose go-to acoustic is a Gibson Hummingbird. And you're going to learn of three non-Gibson Hummingbirds that should be on your radar. That's all coming up right after this. I'm Tony Policastro, and this is the Acoustic Tuesday Show. Guitar geeks, unite. Welcome to Acoustic Tuesday, episode 134. This is the show where you're going to learn about acoustic guitar gear, discover acoustic artists, and get inspired to live your very best acoustic life. As with all episodes of Acoustic Tuesday, I'm going to dig into my guitar geek list for the week. And yes, this week it is all about the Gibson Hummingbird. But prior to digging into that, let's go ahead and dig into some guitar geek trivia. Yes, the second question I'm going to ask you today, and this is one that found me researching the Kalamazoo Museum archives for. Yes, a pretty interesting question here, and one that, of course, involves none other than, well, the Gibson Hummingbird. Here's your question. The Gibson Hummingbird was released in 1960-61. And the individual responsible for designing its iconic pickguard was Hartford Snyder. In what year did he start his tenure at Gibson? Was it A, 1943, B, 1958, C, 1960, or D, 1964? Go ahead and ponder that question at the end of the show. I'll be sure to give you the answer. All right, let's move right along here. And this is, we're going to celebrate another iconic bird, but it's not necessarily related to the Gibson Hummingbird. Although, actually, now that I think about it, it actually is related to the Gibson Hummingbird. Check this out. There was a documentary just released on the Bluebird Cafe in Nashville. And I thought, Bluebird, it's got bird in the name, it's going in the Hummingbird episode. Then the more I thought about it, I thought there actually is a connection, because the Gibson Hummingbird guitar is really a favorite of a lot of singer-songwriters. Well, a lot of singer-songwriters end up playing at the Bluebird Cafe, so this was a shoe-in for the Hummingbird episode. So with the documentary just being released, let's go ahead and take a look at the Bluebird Cafe documentary trailer. Here it is.
I don't think that there's an artist that I know that doesn't have a Bluebird story.
The careers that have come out of here have had dips.
Whether you're the biggest songwriter in Nashville or someone that's been there for a week, it's an equal playing field.
If you had a discography of all the songs that got played in here, I bet it would just be staggering.
Looking back.
I didn't realize these artists that I listened to growing up didn't write all these songs.
Ladies and gentlemen, would you please put your hands together for Taylor Swift.
Sometimes in the middle of the night, I can feel you again.
You feel like you're not just inside the Bluebird, you're inside the music business.
We got it all at your jungle room.
My first time coming to the Bluebird, I go, this can't be it.
You just pull up and it's like next to a dry cleaner. You're like, am I in the right place?
It was like any other club back in the day.
I remember the Bluebird as a rock joint more than I do anything else.
You know, drinking and smoking and talking, there was definitely not the shushing business going on.
They've torn down several buildings next to the Bluebird. We're tucked in the middle of what the developer owns. You just never know what's going to happen.
History's everything. The fact that the Bluebird Cafe is still there in the strip mall when a lot of money is trying to erase why everybody's moving here makes me hopeful.
It's an aspiring place to young songwriters.
It gives people on the ground floor of their dreams a chance to tell their story.
It's that step in the journey, and I'm proud that the Bluebird was one of those steps for me.
Being in that room, playing that place, can change your life, as it did mine.
Oh, I can hear playing. I can hear the ringing of a beat up old guitar.
Everybody is great, but they're getting a chance. And that chance means that maybe they can get to be great.
The uniqueness of this is utter. There's nothing like this. Name it.
It was a Tony's Acoustic Challenge member that actually turned me on to the fact that that documentary had been released and that I could watch it. Now, I'm thinking about the Bluebird Cafe and this documentary. I thought to myself, wait, the Bluebird Cafe, when I went to Nashville, I didn't have a chance to go there. Colorado Kyle just informed me during that. Him and his wife actually drove by it at about 11, so it wasn't open, so they didn't get a chance to go in. But another Tony's Acoustic Challenge member not only had a chance to go in there, not only had a chance to visit this iconic place, she had a chance to actually play one of her original songs at the Bluebird Cafe. I'm talking, this is like the peak of the singer-songwriter mountain. I was so stunned when I heard about this. I was so excited. I wanted to share it with all of you guitar geeks. Yes, Aaron Michel, Tony's Acoustic Challenge member, singer-songwriter extraordinaire, actually won a songwriting competition and had a chance to play at the Bluebird Cafe. And I just wanted to take a second and congratulate her. This was some time ago, but I wanted to publicly congratulate her right here, right now, and also share the moment with you all, because she so kindly sent in some video. And here is Aaron Michel playing her very own song at the Bluebird Cafe.
Well, I would like to sing you guys a happy song about a relationship going right. I'm Aaron Michel. It's nice to meet you all. This is my first time ever. I've tried to get tickets here so many times. This is the only way that you can get in. So I think it's only appropriate that I start with the song that got me here tonight. I wrote this song for my husband, who is dutifully back in Maryland watching our two-year-old so that I can be here tonight. And this song is inspired by something Neil deGrasse Tyson said, but you can't really say in a song Neil deGrasse Tyson told me because it's too many syllables, so I just replaced it with mama, and that worked great. So. So this is my kind of broken.
My daddy told me once, we're all just on the run.
We're sinners, saints, and children on the mend. There's nothing pure or light. There is no wrong or right. The best that you can hope for is to make it to the end. Well, I think he must have meant this simple truth. We walk this world all broken in two. You're my kind of broken. Sharp little edges in just the right place. Wearing your scars with a smile on your face. And when the whole world's crashing down, you keep me hoping. You're my kind of broken.
All right, I want to thank Erin for sharing that moment with all of us. It was so cool. We reached out to her to see if we could feature it, and she not only sent the video, she sent a very very kind and thoughtful email along with it. So I just want to thank her for that. And how cool to see, you know, a Tony's Acoustic Challenge member write their own song and actually go and play it at the Bluebird Cafe. It's so cool, and just really kind of underscores the community feel. And speaking of the community, I wanted to actually rewind the clock and go back to episode 132. And I wanted to hear from some of you guitar geeks. In fact, I've got some comments pulled from that show. That was our John Fahey episode, and holy smokes, did that create the comment storm. Our first comment comes from Hakan A, and he says this: thank you for putting John Fahey in the light again and presenting a new generation of primitive guitar players. I became a John Fahey fan in 1970 after watching the movie Zabriskie Point, where Fahey plays the Dance of Death. That was something totally different from what I had heard before. I purchased what albums I could get in Sweden, where I live, and practiced with my steel string guitar. At the time, I was very fond of bluegrass music. Last year, I read John Fahey's book, How Bluegrass Music Destroyed My Life. But I still love that kind of music. Still, John Fahey's way of playing has inspired me all my life. At times, I publish guitar music on my YouTube channel, and every time, I use some little part of what I heard from the records of the master of American primitive guitar. Kind regards from Sweden. Well, thanks so much for the comment and sharing your own kind of John Fahey inspiration story. Very cool to hear. Our next comment is a little bit of a twofer, and it comes in the form of, the first one comes from James McDonald, and he says this: I used to see John Fahey at the Ash Grove in Hollywood when I was a student at UCLA in the mid to late 60s. He was so unique. I had never heard guitar played that way. And that is so cool to hear because, you know, as I read, you know, about when you were a student there at UCLA in the mid to late 60s, I believe that's when John was going to school there and pursuing his master's degree, if I'm not mistaken. So really cool kind of cross-section of time, and what a treat to be able to see him play at that time. The next comment was right beneath James' comment, and I had to feature it because I just couldn't let this one go unnoticed. Speaking of Tony's Acoustic Challenge members, Karen Lafferty says this: this article from Bandcamp has some great info and links to the artist's music. And she actually posted a link in the comments. So make sure to check out that episode 132. Check out that list. It's pretty awesome. And not only is it awesome for just collecting artists' names, there's sound samples right on that page. So thank you for sharing that, Karen. That was really, really awesome. Our next comment comes from Mr. Phil, and he says this: a huge plus one on Gwennifer Raymond. She is a primitive beast. In fact, I have one of her Primitive Beast t-shirts designed by her also very talented sister, Casey. By the way, I just checked out these t-shirts this morning on her website. I'm pretty sure I'm going to be pulling the trigger on one because they're awesome, and you all should as well if you're a fan of Gwennifer Raymond. Continuing on the comment, her piece Requiem for John Fahey was actually the result of her trying to learn Fahey's Requiem for John Hurt. She realized she was doing it wrong, and rather than just fix what she was doing, she decided to turn it into her own homage to the man himself. I've thought about cutting off my right thumb and sending it to Gwen for training, but I'm afraid it would be a poor student, and I'm not exactly sure how to reattach it anyway. I kind of picture some sort of Young Frankenstein thing where you get your thumb back and it comes in a jar that says Abby Normal, and it's this overactive, crazy thumb. I don't know if there's any Young Frankenstein fans out there, but what a phenomenal movie. What a phenomenal movie. Colorado Kyle just gave me the thumbs up, and he's a film guy, so I feel like I hit a home run there. Our next comment comes from Patrick Ball. And he says this, by the way, this is not the last we're going to hear from Patrick. We'll get to more Patrick stories here in a moment. Patrick says, "This was my first introduction to John Fahey and all the other artists you featured today. Great show, Tony. Thanks. When I try to pinpoint who my inspiration for playing guitar was, it's so hard to say. Probably Roy Clark, Chet Atkins, Glenn Campbell, and George Harrison. My family was not into music, so it was television that allowed me to see and hear these artists. This is exactly why I'm loving the Acoustic Tuesday show. Guitar Geeks Unite." Such a cool comment. And, you know, I have to say, this started to make me think about how lucky we are in this day and age, not to sound like, back in the day, but in this day and age, you know, we can look up any artist and see them play right there on our computer within seconds. It's pretty stunning, and we're really lucky to have that. It's so cool to be able to look up John Fahey and see the performances. It's so cool to be able to look up Gwennifer Raymond and see the performances. So very cool. And thanks for bringing that to our collective attention, Patrick. Appreciate that. Our next comment is another John Fahey story, and there were quite a few on the episode. So again, I want to encourage you to dig into those comments and read some of them, because there are some can I say bombastic? I think that's a good word. Yeah, we'll say bombastic John Fahey stories. But this one comes from Scott Hunter, and he says this. "I saw Fahey by accident at the 1969 Memphis Country Blues Festival. Johnny Winter was supposed to play the big Saturday night show, but typically, sorry Tony, I'm not a fan. It's okay, we can have differences, it's not a big deal. Winter was too drunk or whatever to play, and to quell the rising anger of the crowd, the festival directors somehow convinced Fahey, who was scheduled for an entirely different day, to come to the venue and perform. After more than an hour's delay, he appeared. Walking onto the dark stage toward a centrally located circle of light, he carried his guitar by the neck in one hand and a simple kitchen-type chair in the other. A cigarette dangled from his lip. He never said a word, sat down, and played one tune for 5 minutes or so, stood up, and walked off the stage back into the darkness. Talk about American primitive." Talk about an awesome story, and thank you for sharing that, Scott. It's so cool. And one of the other things I mentioned, Colorado Kyle and I were talking last week about the episode, the John Fahey episode, and, you know, some people said, hey, you know, John Fahey is just not my cup of tea. And you know what? That's totally okay. And I appreciate those opinions as well. You know, just because we're guitar geeks doesn't mean we all have to like the same music, but it's cool to at least acknowledge its place in acoustic guitar history and kind of in its importance in kind of propelling the acoustic guitar forward as an artistic and creative outlet for these varying different types of artists. So it's totally okay if we don't always align. In fact, I welcome the other side, because that creates wonderful guitar geek discussion, and that's exactly what happened in episode 132. So bottom line, thank you for all the comments and participation in the Acoustic Tuesday show. You know, just thank you for watching it. Thank you for, if you so choose to comment, thank you for doing that as well. It's so great to hear from you all, and so great to generate that kind of guitar geek community here on YouTube, which sometimes the comments can be fairly unfriendly, but you know what? I'm proud of this audience, because we keep it pretty positive and supportive, so thank you for that. All right, next up, make sure to visit AcousticTuesday.store, because you can actually support the Acoustic Tuesday show by buying merchandise, and we're going to celebrate that support by featuring you on a future Acoustic Tuesday episode. And here's how you do it. Step one, go to AcousticTuesday.store and order your favorite piece of merchandise. Step two, put it on and take a picture of you with that merchandise on. This could be with your family, with your guitars, at a concert, out to dinner, on vacation, strolling down the sidewalk with your dog. As long as you're wearing Acoustic Tuesday merchandise, we want to see. And then lastly, submit it at acousticlife.tv. There's a submit link in the top menu. Click on that. Go ahead and upload your picture and tell us your story, just like Patrick Ball did. In fact, here he is with his guitar arsenal, and he says this in his submission. This is, I gotta take a second. This is one of the coolest submissions I've ever seen. Not only is it guitar geeky, not only does he have the Acoustic Tuesday merch, he's in front of like a fighter jet. I don't think we've seen this before on the Acoustic Tuesday show. So yes, ladies and gentlemen, this is a first. And here's what Patrick had to say. "My name is Patrick Ball. You may remember me from the 5-Day Blues Challenge the week of January 20th. My 2020 resolution was posted as a small win on day one. I'm stepping out, starting to connect with other guitar geeks. I've wanted to play guitar for years. One of my guitar idols was Roy Clark, watching Hee Haw in the late 1960s. As you can see, my guitar arsenal has a rather unique twist. A McDonnell Douglas Skyhawk A4 M2 The Easter Egg was the last A4 ever built. Its mission was close air support, armed reconnaissance, and air defense. I'm on the board of directors at the Flying Leatherneck Historical Foundation. The foundation supports the Marine Corps Command Museum for Aviation. The museum is located at Marine Corps Air Station Miramar, MCAS, San Diego. Oh, my guitars. I first attempted guitar in 2004. My first was the Jasmine acoustic. Like most, I tried teaching myself, got very frustrated, and quit. And that's the Jasmine model you see there, the model S45SK. I've recently had the bridge saddle replaced with bone. What a resonant upgrade. In 2014, after a tour of the Fender factory in Corona, California, my inspiration to try again was Buddy Holly's Stratocaster. That year, I received my Squire Sunburst Strat Affinity, crafted in China. This time, I'm getting serious. I took private lessons from a great instructor, picked up a few basics, but most importantly, developed a practice routine. Fell in love with playing. About a year ago, I discovered the Acoustic Tuesday Show. In 2016, as a birthday gift, I received this beautiful American Standard Fender Telecaster, made in 2015 in Corona, California. So why the aircraft? Well, you asked for an arsenal. This baby packs a punch. At the Flying Leatherneck Aviation Museum, we host a variety of programs. My next goal is to introduce the Guitars for Vets concept to our foundation's board to see how the Flying Leathernecks might be able to support you. Perhaps there is a way we can host or sponsor something at MCAS Miramar in the future. Thanks so very much for all you do, Tony. Guitar Geeks Unite. Patrick, what a hell of a guitar arsenal shot and a great story. And I do remember you from the 5-Day Blues Challenge. In fact, I want to say you were on nearly every one of our Facebook Lives that we did during that time. And just appreciate your enthusiasm. And I love that you're just digging into guitar and wanting to connect with other guitar geeks. So thank you for submitting that. Thank you for watching the show. And thanks for just being an awesome example of a great guitar geek. Let's visit the mailbag. You may have noticed I'm wearing an Arrival. Yes, I could not wait to put this on. It's St. Patrick's Day, so why not, right? It is indeed the Blackhawks St. Patty's Day jersey. You've got the little flannel accent there. We got the little shamrock on the shoulder. Of course, the best logo in all of sports, the Chicago Blackhawks logo, my favorite team, of course. You know, and every single time I say they're doing well, they turn around and prove me wrong. So they had a little rough. They lost to the Red Wings recently, which really bummed me out, because the Red Wings haven't won very much this year. They're in a rebuild year. And then they just lost to the Blues last night, at least at the time of this filming. So they're kind of on a, we'll call it a mini slide. I'm still hoping for the wild card spot. By the time this airs, maybe they've risen in the rankings. We'll see. Also, excuse me, in the mailbag was a fun bottle of bourbon. Yes, indeed. A 6th Street bourbon. Yes, it's shaped like a guitar, ladies and gentlemen, and it's got a pick. So I want to thank Tony's Acoustic Challenge member, Gene XL, for sending me that fantastic Arrival. I was delighted. My mouth was watering. I'm excited to dig into that. And then another Arrival. This is very cool and very guitar geeky. This is a fun little Arrival from my guitar geek buddy, Jim R. And him and his wife designed a Guitar Geeks Unite logo, put it on a hat, put it on a couple of shirts, and I'm darn excited about these. I want to thank you, Jim. I'll be reaching out via email, and we'll connect about the shirts and whatnot. But thank you for sending me those. This is the first edition. And in his letter, he mentioned that he's like, you know, of all the merchandise you have on that site, there's no hats, which made me think, gosh, we got to get some hats in there. But also he mentioned that, you know, he would drive like 10 hours to go retrieve his favorite hat if he left it somewhere. And I feel the same way. You know, ever since Colorado Kyle came on board, my hat collection is just, I keep growing it. Colorado Kyle has probably 376 Colorado Rockies hats. And he inspired me to just fully dive into hat purchasing. So I've expanded my collection of Chicago Blackhawks hats significantly, much to Whitney's dismay, because I used to tell Whitney I was a one-hat guy. What do you need more than one hat for? You just have one hat. When it wears out, you buy a new hat. Well, now I have like 10. And she definitely reminds me of my previous statement often. But she actually wears some of my hats too, so I think we both benefit. It's just, it's just how we do things, I guess. I'm going to call this a mailbag arrival, but this was more of a digital mailbag arrival. We have a Facebook group called Play Acoustic Guitar Every Day, and in that group, Mike Martin posted something that I thought was just awesome. And he says this, not directly guitar related, but last week's Acoustic Tuesday show related. I hit my local used vinyl shop yesterday and scored John Fahey's second release on Vanguard Records, Yellow Princess, and Mike Aldridge's Dobro, which was featured in the trivia question. I wasn't familiar with either artist until Tuesday's show. Both records are most excellent. Hashtag big win, hashtag crate digging. Thank you for sharing that, Mike. I thought that was really cool. I wanted to include it on the show because, well, we talked about John Fahey in extensive detail on episode 132, and I was like, yeah, there's an Acoustic Tuesday viewer that took some action and bought some records, so very cool. All right, let's move on to our Artist of the Week. Now, this is a first for Acoustic Tuesday, maybe not a first, but maybe a first in a long time. This particular artist, I would not say are primarily acoustic. However, they do not shy away from acoustic performances. And I thought to myself, do I include them? Do I not include them? Do I include them? Do I not include them? Do I include them? Do I not include them? Well, here they are. Blackberry Smoke. Yes, I want to call them, I want to like name the genre. I can't name the genre. They kind of sound like the Black Crowes. They kind of sound like the Allman Brothers. They kind of have a Southern rock vibe. They got a little bit of a country vibe. They definitely have a folk vibe. Downright, they're just cool. They're from the Atlanta music scene, and here are the members of the band. We've got Charlie Starr on vocals and lead guitar. We've got Paul Jackson on vocals and guitar. We've got Richard Turner on bass and vocals, drummer Britt Turner, and keyboardist Brandon Still. And here is one of my favorite songs by them, entitled Pretty Little Lie.
Hi, we're Blackberry Smoke, and we're in the beautiful San Francisco sunshine. This song is called Pretty Little Lie. By me, tell me everything I wanna hear. Yeah, I'll pretend that I don't see the reason you're back over here. You look cold, I'll build a fire. There's a box full of wine in the fridge. We won't talk about what's in name. That's just water.
Colorado Kyle says to me, he says, hey, I recognize that guitar. Of course he's playing a Gibson Hummingbird. We're celebrating the Gibson Hummingbird today. And I thought to myself, I know they're an electric band, predominantly, but their acoustic performances are outstanding. And lo and behold, he plays a Gibson Hummingbird. The stars are aligning. And the dude has mutton chops. I mean, if he was a member of a group of superheroes, his power would be super mutton chops. I think he would just shoot laser beams out of his mutton chops. But I digress. I want to make a comment about his voice. And one of the reasons why I really dig this band is when they do an acoustic performance, the lead singer's voice shines, but also the harmonies are awesome. I mean, I'm going to maybe make a reach here, but you know, I love bands like the Eagles. I love bands like the Birds, Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. And I want to say, you know, hearing them sing harmony is beautiful. It takes me to that place, and which is why I wanted to share this band, Blackberry Smoke, with you. Let's listen to another song. This was recorded at the Bing Lounge, and it's entitled Everybody Knows She's Mine.
Well, it might be a but rest assured, brother, this one mine. I'll be right there in her hip. She got my name tattooed where the sun don't shine. Saw you looking when she walked in with me. I don't blame you, she's a hell of a girl now. Hey, I know how you feel, it ain't no big deal. I'm the luckiest man in the world, oh yeah. She gets me high as a Georgia pine, wild as a muscadine mine.
So this band is clearly guitar geeky. We've got long hair, we got mutton chops, we got a solid beard on the percussionist in the background. Not to mention that percussionist does not play a drum kit, he doesn't play a cajon, he plays a guitar. He plays a guitar with various percussive elements attached to it. You got two guitars up front, you got killer 70s kind of vibey, hippie-ish style. It doesn't get much better than this, in my opinion. And what a great sounding band, if we're really going to dig into the guitar geekiness of it. Cool dynamic between the whole band, wonderful balance, and the songwriting is just on point. I know I mentioned harmonies before, which is why I want to leave you with this very special song by them. Well, I'm not leaving you. I want this to be the last taste in your mouth before I come back. And then when I come back, we still have three non-Gibson Hummingbirds, but we're still focused on the band. Sorry, I got distracted. Let's listen to the song, Ain't Much Left of Me.
Well, my fall from grace was a sight to see. Good turn to bad and bad turn to misery.
See what I mean when I'm talking about harmony? You got the bassist chiming in, the other guitarist chiming in, Charlie up front. I love it. When the bassist started singing in that particular song, I was hooked. That's it. I like hook, line, and sinker, I'm done. Just sign me up. Give me all the albums. Speaking of albums, there's a few that I want to recommend to you all. Now remember, when you get these albums, they are predominantly electric. So I don't want you to feel like I threw a curveball at you. But there's a little hidden silver lining here. Let me mention that. So first album that I want you to check out, the one that I've really been digging, it was released in 2012, I believe, entitled The Whippoorwill. Killer album art, by the way. I'm a sucker for good album art. That definitely fits the bill, in my opinion. Next up in 2014 is called Holding All the Roses. Now, there are two releases under this name. One is standard and one is the deluxe version. Now, the deluxe version has some acoustic performances of their song. So I want to push you towards the deluxe version of Holding All the Roses. And then another one released in 2018 called Find a Light, another stellar album cover. I'll also mention they have a couple different live albums out there. One is live in Atlanta, the other one is live in North Carolina. But bottom line, this is a band you absolutely need to know. The reason I found this band is because Charlie plays a Gibson Hummingbird. And for no other reason. But once I found them, I was very thankful that I did. And really continually knocking my socks off. Whitney and I were hanging pictures last weekend. I know, exciting times at the Polo Castro household. And I queued them up. And Whitney was like, who is this? I really like these guys. And I'm like, that's why I married you, Whit. You got great taste in music. Anyways, I digress. Let's move on. I know that Charlie Starr of Blackberry... I almost said Blackberry Blossom. That's a bluegrass tune. Blackberry Smoke. Charlie Starr of Blackberry Smoke plays a Gibson Hummingbird. But I want to dig into three non-Gibson Hummingbirds that you should be aware of, that should be on your radar. Now, here's the crazy thing. There's not many guitars offered in this department stock. And I say this because I thought, oh, Gibson Hummingbird clones, everybody makes those, right? Well, upon researching, no. What I was looking for distinctly was a Sitka spruce-topped, mahogany back and sides, short-scale, square-shouldered dreadnought. There are plenty of slope-shoulder options, but there are no square-shoulder options out there except for the three that I found. Now, that being said, if you know of one and I miss it on my list, please let me know in the comments below. Be nice. I know you will. But let me know if I missed one because these were darn hard to find. But let's kick off with the obvious one. And the first one is the Epiphone Hummingbird Pro. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with Epiphone, Epiphone and Gibson are kind of like, well, what's a great comparison? I don't have a comparison. They're related. Gibson purchased Epiphone, I believe, back in the 40s, originally for their string basses, and then it grew into this partnership that has evolved into today, where Epiphone is offering some lower-priced guitars that look like the higher-priced Gibson models. Now, that being the case, the Epiphone Hummingbird Pro, I believe, comes in at about $399. Not a tall price tag for a guitar. It offers a solid top, laminate mahogany back and sides. It does give you the Hummingbird aesthetic. It does have that shorter scale length, that slim taper neck. And I have to say, for a guitar in this price range, it actually offers a pretty good punch. I think it punches well above its price range. In fact, there is a demo done from Anderton's Music in the UK where they compared a Gibson Hummingbird from the Bozeman factory to an Epiphone Hummingbird Pro. And I was actually pretty stunned. Now, the Gibson Hummingbird from the US actually did have a little bit more depth, but I gotta say the Hummingbird Pro by Epiphone held its own, and I was pretty impressed, which is why it is on this list. And if you're wondering how it sounds, well, here it is. It doesn't sound bad. For $399, it does not sound bad. And the cool thing is you get that Hummingbird aesthetic. And, you know, one of the things that I noticed as I was looking at that guitar, I remember as a young guitar geek, when I was in college, I'd get the Musician's Friend catalog when they still actually mailed out catalogs. And I would flip through it. And I would look at the Gibsons and I'd think, oh, I'm never going to be able to get one of those. And I'd look at the Epiphones and I thought, I can get the same look, but at a lower price point. And I think that's really the magic. You know, when you think about what Epiphone offers is you get the look and the feel of a guitar that generally costs a lot more. But as a youngster or a guitar geek that's just starting out, or maybe you just want that aesthetic, but it's just not in the cards to get the full-on Gibson version, Epiphone really offers some wonderful things. And in some further research, I checked into the newly offered Epiphone Masterbuilts, and they're offering a Frontier, and it totally blows my mind, and I'm really excited about it. I know that's not on the Gibson Hummingbird topic, but I had to share that with you because I just couldn't hold it in. It's like trying to hold in a secret. I'm not very good at that. Holy smokes, I'm excited. They also have a Texan, Epiphone Masterbuilt Texan, and they also have, I want to say, Riviera? If that makes sense. Really cool guitar. Anyways, I'll get off that. Epiphone Masterbuilts are definitely worth checking out, but that's not the focus. The Epiphone Hummingbird Pro is. Bottom line, it's a cool guitar that offers a cool look at a much lower price point. So definitely want to check out. The next one on my list, I don't even think is made anymore, but it made such an impact on me, I needed to include it on this list because I hope because of this episode, Martin decides to start making this as a stock model again. Okay, what is it? It's the D18 SS. It's a short scale Martin D18. It's a square shoulder dreadnought, Sitka spruce top, mahogany back and sides, 24 3/4 scale. It's basically like a Hummingbird, but Martin's Hummingbird. Or, yeah, we'll go with it. This guitar is so comfortable to play because of the short scale. It has that signature Martin tone, that kind of bass and those nice rich overtones, the kind of crispiness that the mahogany offers. And it's just a delight to look at. It's got a long through saddle, very vintage kind of aesthetic. I believe it was discontinued 2012, 13, or 14. I remember stocking them when I worked at Music Villa and we sold them like hotcakes. I love the guitar. And of course you can get it via the custom shop now, but Martin, please bring this back to a stock model. I'm sure there was a reason why you guys discontinued it, you guys and gals discontinued it, but please, just for a guitar geek, for us guitar geeks, offer this again. It was a great model, and it fit just a great, great spot in the lineup. Anyways, here's a much younger version of me playing this guitar. You're going to see a lot less tattoos, a lot less hair, Sad state of affairs, but the guitar is the star of the show. Let's take a look. If this says anything about my fashion and how I keep up with the times, I'm pretty sure I still have those jeans. Nothing to do with the guitar, but something I noticed and I wanted to share with you because, well, I'm all about being transparent today, apparently. But the D18SS, the short-scale D18 from Martin, which has since been discontinued, is one that I want you to know about in case you find it used. I just went on Reverb, as I was doing research for the show, and there was a couple on Reverb that were offered at a pretty sweet price. So it's definitely a steal if you can get your hands on one. And again, just a Hail Mary here. Hey, Martin, kind folks at Martin. I love your guitars. I'm a big fan. And please bring back the short scale D18. It's a great, great instrument. And I'd love to see it in the lineup again, if you know what I'm saying. Next up, the final non-Gibson Hummingbird that I want you to know about comes from Bozeman, Montana. No, it does not come from the Gibson factory. No, it doesn't. It doesn't. But it does come from Gibson, or from Bozeman, Montana, not Gibson, Montana. That place might exist. I don't know if it does, but we're not talking about it. It comes from Kevin Kopp. Kevin Kopp makes beautiful guitars. Colorado Kyle and I were just at a shop a couple weekends ago filming some things, and from his Tonewood, just the raw Tonewood, to what he's making. I played a small body guitar with a redwood top. He makes beautiful instruments, and the attention to detail is stunning. The bursts are stunning. He does a hand rub stain on the spruce top. Beautiful, and he has a guitar called the Bird. What is it? It's a square shoulder dreadnought, Sitka spruce top, mahogany back and sides, 24 3/4 scale. Sounds a lot like a Hummingbird, doesn't it? No, it's not. It's called the Bird, and it's by Kevin Kopp from here in Bozeman, and here are the folks at Acoustic Music Works checking it out. Let's take a look. Pretty awesome sounding guitar, and just knowing Kevin and his attention to detail, it's no surprise the guitar sounds amazing. Like I said before, he makes truly beautiful instruments, and we're really lucky because he's literally 2.5 miles away from the studio here. What an awesome dude and a great builder. Somebody you should definitely know about. Now, here's the important piece. If you want to learn about these guitars, if you want to learn more about Blackberry Smoke, if you want to learn more about anything I've talked about in today's episode, please visit acousticlife.tv/AT134. And now that you're thinking about non-Gibson Hummingbirds, I want to ask you this question again. Did I miss any? Please let me know. I had a hard time finding any stock models that were not from the custom shop, but square shoulder, short scale dreadnoughts, Sitka spruce, mahogany. If there are any that you know of that I missed, please list them in the comments below. I would love to learn more, as I'm sure many of the guitar geeks watching this show certainly would. So again, please leave those in the comments below. Now we're about ready to wrap up the show, but we've got a very important order of business, and that of course is Guitar Geek Trivia. We've been talking about the Gibson Hummingbird. We learned 5 reasons why you need to experience it. We actually learned about the Bluebird Cafe, which is loosely related to the Gibson Hummingbird. We checked out Blackberry Smoke, whose lead guitar player, Charlie Starr, plays a Gibson Hummingbird. We looked at non-Gibson Hummingbirds. Now it's time to wrap up with a Hummingbird-infused trivia question. Here it is. The Gibson Hummingbird, released in 1960-61, and the individual, which I did this when we were rehearsing, and I'm going to do it again here live. We're not even going to cut. You're going to see the warts and all. The Gibson Hummingbird was released in 1960-61, and the individual responsible for designing its iconic pickguard was Hartford Snyder. In what year did he start his tenure at Gibson? Was it 1943, 1958, 1960, or 1964? Well, if you answered A, 1943, you are absolutely correct. In Hartford's mid-30s, he left his home for Kalamazoo, where he hoped to secure a job at Gibson. That dream came true in 1943, when he started his career building instruments in the woodshop. He also worked in the custom department, performing intricate repair jobs and creating custom finger rests. Snyder invented 8 fiddles, 2 guitars, 2 mandolins, and 2 other stringed instruments during his career. But his most memorable work for guitar enthusiasts, guitar geeks, was as a pattern maker, where he created pickguard designs for some of Gibson's most popular flat-top guitars. Hand-etched in celluloid, this Hummingbird design was first used in 1960 and has since been reproduced by Gibson for several anniversary runs. Pretty awesome, and this was one of those Guitar Geek trivia questions that found me chasing all sorts of different thoughts all across the internet. And I found something in the Kalamazoo Museum Archives that was a feature on Hartford Snyder. There's a link to that at acousticlife.tv/AT134. It's a short read, but for a guitar geek who likes Gibson Hummingbirds, you absolutely must read it. It's very cool and pretty interesting that such an iconic pickguard. I never knew who made it. I never knew who was responsible for it. And now I do. And now you do too, because you've watched the Acoustic Tuesday show through and through. I can't think of any more rhymes for me or for you. Feels like Dr. Seuss, doesn't it? Anyways, let's take a sneak peek into next week to see what's going to happen on the Acoustic Tuesday show. Next week on Acoustic Tuesday, bang for your buck is the name of the game. Yes, we're going to be budget shopping together. I'm going to share with you my favorite guitars that fall under $300. Yes, by popular request, comment after comment, I say, hey, Tone. They say, hey, Tone, please, please feature some guitars that are cheaper, that are great bang for your buck. Well, that time is here, and it's going to happen next week on Acoustic Tuesday. Yes, guitars that I love that are under $300. Get your checkbooks ready, because I have a feeling some guitar purchases will be made. Remember, you can catch Acoustic Tuesday every single Tuesday at 10 a.m. Mountain Time here on YouTube. And of course, for your Acoustic Tuesday fix in between Tuesdays, please visit acousticlife.tv, where you can do a deep dive on anything I've ever featured on the Acoustic Tuesday show. Thank you so much for joining this Gibson Hummingbird celebration today. Thank you so much for being a guitar geek, and I'll see you next Tuesday. Remember, guitar geeks unite. Cheers.